The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hey, welcome into Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange alongside Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. You can follow Charlie on X at Polillo and read him weekly on sportsmap.com. Josh Jordan, you can follow at JoshJordan975 on X and read his work daily on sportsmap.com. Gents, the biggest news from the preceding couple of days is, other than the Astros play much better 7,000 feet above sea level, is that minor league masher Joey Loperfido gets the call up. Now, he's hit 13 home runs in 25 games, which is pretty impressive. Not to throw a cold blanket on it, but last season when John Singleton was called up, he was hitting 333 with 12 homers and an 1,100 OPS. Just for perspective, just trying to keep it real. But Charlie, I just want to ask you, do you think, in your opinion, Loperfido's promotion is connected more towards Jake Meyer's lack of success, the black hole that is first base, or just the general lack of power and them looking to add a spark to this lineup?
Oh, look, the root of this is that Jose Abreu is more in need of formaldehyde than an energy drink. Checked as I could, turns out the Astros were not able to get a hold of Abreu's passport and visa in Mexico, and oops, we can't find it, and Jose can't get back across the border with the ball club. So he and his contract are still an albatross attached to the Astros. And with John Singleton as alternative one, I mean, come on. I've used a couple of metaphors for the Abreu-Singleton combo to this point. Abreu managed to soar over the 100 mark so briefly, but back down to 99 for his batting average stateside. And that's not about conversion rate. That's about just sucking. John Singleton is not a major league worthy ball player. It's not personal. It's business. So Loperfido, the power stuff obviously wows you. 37 strikeouts in 101 at-bats, AAA is a problem. He's going to whiff an extremely high percentage of the time as a major leaguer. But what, like Abreu and Singleton don't? And so if Loperfido delivers some of the power, right, his first home run will be more than Abreu and Singleton have combined. By the way, more than Abreu and Singleton and Alex Bregman and Chaz McCormick have combined. So he has to be up here to play. You alluded to Jake Meyers. He and McCormick have been two thuds in the outfield. Loperfido thought to be more of a natural outfielder, but not thought to be a plus defensive center fielder, another kind of noodle arm out there. Wouldn't be much of a drop-off from Meyers or McCormick throwing it in center field. But this has to be, at minimum, platooning at first base. Singleton can't be optioned to the minors without his permission. So what? If someone doesn't claim him on waivers, wow, that would be shocking. You DFA him, release him, and then if he wants to go to the minors, because what if Loperfido comes up and flops? Then what? Oh, you have to rush John Singleton back onto the roster? They can go a couple of other different ways, right? Gray Kessinger is basically in mothballs, hardly ever plays. They can just send him out if they don't want to have to do other roster gymnastics, but they do have to create a 40-man spot to promote Loperfido to the major leagues. That's easily accomplished. They could release Kendall Graveman. He's in the last year of his contract. He's out for the year injured. So they can come up with that aspect of it. But Loperfido, left-handed thumper, first two games of the series with the Guardians, the Astros are facing Carlos Carrasco, right-hander, and Tristan McKenzie, right-hander. Loperfido needs to be in the lineup at first base in both of those games. The Thursday finale, they face a lefty in Logan Allen, so you can throw Abreu in that day to give him a chance to get back over 100.
It's interesting, right? Because if they were just doing this by performance, you get rid of Abreu. I mean, Singleton hasn't been good, but he's been better than Abreu. But they're committed to all that money. And I thought it was very interesting that Chandler Rome mentioned in The Athletic, they've reached out to Jim Crane a couple times recently about just getting a comment from him, and he's not looking to make any comments right now. So I'm sure part of that's about Abreu and the start to the season and that terrible contract they're stuck with. But yeah, I think Loperfido is going to play. To Charlie's point, he's not just playing first base in the minors. He's playing a lot of center field. In fact, his last two games, he played center field, and then he played first base a couple games. So, I mean, I think you just take what you can get him out there, see what he can do. I think DeBond's starting to show you, too, that he's a pretty good option in center field. He made a hell of a throw the other day to keep a runner at second base. He just fired it into third. And you know, we're very familiar with what he can do out there, especially when Verlander starts. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see a little more DeBond with Jake Myers and Chaz struggling this year. But I want to see what Loperfido can do. It seemed like the team got along well with him in spring training, felt like he belonged. So, and that's what Dana Brown said too, after that hot spring and they decided to, you know, put him in the minors. He was like, let's see if he continues what he did in spring in the minors. And he's done that. So to their credit, they're bringing him up, giving him a shot, but also they have to, they don't have many other options, and they need a spark. They need to get something out of first base. So I'm really excited to see what he can do.
Yeah. I think they've been clinging to the hope that, well, Abreu will warm up. He can't stay this bad. He can't stay this bad. Wait, he's getting worse? Well, he can't be any worse than that. Wait, he can? That Loperfido's only played 7 games at first base this season. They're a little slow in giving him a taste there. He's played some before, but athletically, he'll be all right, right? He's played a little bit of second base. He's a bigger guy, 6'3", 220. That he played any second base at that size is kind of an outlier. So, and throw in, I mean, not to pile on Abreu, except to pile on Abreu. I mean, routine pop-ups and balls you expect the first baseman to dig out of the dirt more often than not, it's like his motor skills across the baseball board have just vanished. So, Loperfido, how can he be a step down from what Abreu has given you in any area? I mean, if they each reach on an error, right? Abreu runs with a refrigerator on his back. Loperfido has speed, 20-plus stolen bases in the minor leagues last year. So there's zero reason to call him up to not play him against all right-handed pitching. And first base to me is the obvious, obvious slot, whether Singleton's on the roster or off. All Joey needs is a couple of hits, and then we'll have to settle on a nickname. The Italian Stallion was used up like 50 years ago.
Well, Charlie, going back to your original point, at this point, I'm all for the entire team being unable to get back into the States, because between a field that looks like it was greased with Crisco and balls that in any sort of elevation look like they're hit into outer space.
Kyle Tucker with a lazy fly to ball left field, and oh, it's gone over 400 feet.
Yeah.
It makes Denver look normal.
With a 46 degree launch angle or something crazy like that. Comically, what's funny is it seemed to heal what ailed the Astros offense, except for the aforementioned Jose Abreu, who still can't get enough lift on the ball to even take advantage of the thin air in Mexico City. Now, another thing that was brought up on the broadcast that I wanted to talk with you guys about as soon as I heard it was Framber Valdez. We saw Framber make his return from the IL. He looked pretty good, obviously not stretched out, but had a high number of strikeouts, getting ground balls, doing the things that we're used to seeing Framber Valdez do. But one of the things that the broadcast talked about was how he was attributing the inflammation in his forearm to his sinker and use of the sinker. Now, he relies on that sinker to get a lot of ground ball outs. Are you concerned that he's attributing that, one of his most powerful, potent weapons, aside from that curveball, to that inflammation?
Yes, that would be troubling, unless the connection they're making is that, you know what? I have been overthrowing that sinker, which contributed to the lack of sink over the second half of last season, whether Framber was seduced by the increased numbers on the radar gun. And it's really tough to judge much of anything playing in Mexico City. Right? Bigger picture for the Astros, 2 wins. When you're bleeding out, anything will serve as a tourniquet. So just a different environment and all the hoopla of the appearances. And so they're also facing the Colorado Rockies,
yep,
right, who are just an atrocity of a big league roster. So that the Astros have turned it around would be silliness. But hey, they got the 2 very badly needed wins. Framber, I would think, if anything, it's more 450 innings of work over the last 2 seasons that may be contributing to just cumulative toll. Because if he can't throw that sinker, he's not going to be a high quality starting pitcher. As you mentioned, it's one of his primo weapons, at least when on his game. But hey, at least he looked good. Presuming he comes out with no soreness. And as we talked about some, right, those who already went dead and buried mode on the Astros, silly rabbits, this early in a division where first place is barely over 500. But Verlander, two solid starts. Fromber back, presuming good health, two out of three good starts. Christian Javier rejoins this weekend. Ronel Blanco is not going to continue to pitch to a sub-2 earned run average. That's okay. If he pitches to a low threes ERA and he's the number four starter, because the horses you expect to be 1-2-3 are in there, that goes a long way toward riding the ship. And then in this Cleveland series, Hunter Brown, Spencer Arrighetti, bookending Verlander start, right, ongoing auditions for that number five spot until someone else gets healthy. But, you know, it's a challenging week, right? First place teams as of starting the week, Cleveland, big surprise in the Central. And then Seattle, right? It's a very big for the first weekend of May series. The Astros opening the week, six games back of the Mariners. They come in and dust you three, and you're looking to be 9-10 games out. That would be serious, not kick dirt over them. But for overlapping the end of April, early May, it's a big, big week.
It is. This team looked very different when it's Blanco and Verlander and Fromber. And you're starting to get the, like, okay, they may be okay if these guys get healthy and Javier returns. And I just thought it was interesting that they decided to send JP France down and that they kept Arrighetti with the big league club. Hunter Brown's been atrocious this year. I just think they see the upside with him. And it's funny, Dana Brown was on the flagship station and I heard him make a comment about, oh, that's great that, you know, France was able to limit the damage after the five runs, but you got to make that pitch before you give up the five runs. And he's like, you know, you're just not giving your team a chance. And as I was listening to it, I was like, JP France might be in some trouble here, just kind of from what I'm hearing from Dana Brown. He doesn't seem very pleased. And there you had it. JP France was the guy that went down. I will say this too. It was nice in that finale to see the bullpen kind of operate the way they kind of drew it up to where those guys were coming in, getting out, you know, Montero, and then all your back of the bullpen guys, 7, 8, 9 came in, did their thing. I'm glad to see that the starting pitching got better and the relief pitching looked kind of how they drew it up. So hopefully that continues moving forward.
I think the unfortunate probability of reality with JP France is he caught the league by surprise. Yep. Over his first 2-3 months, his first 17 starts, he was a revelation and a needed revelation in the Astros rotation. Frankly, pitched better with the Astros than he ever had over his minor league career, where he always had control problems. And then you look at how he finished last season, or the very last outing in Game 7 against the Rangers, and the way he started this year, whether, you know, finding his way back toward his professional baseball mean. Brown and Arrighetti's upside vastly exceed that of France. With Hunter Brown, though, tick-tock, at least for 2024. You can't keep running him out there on a regular. Hey, he did get his ERA below 10 the last time out. But Hunter Brown, other than the first month of last season, has nothing that says he belongs in a big league rotation. Well, if you have Verlander, Fromber, Javier, Blanco, you can go with someone else as the fifth, other than Hunter Brown, and Arrighetti gets another audition on Thursday.
And while the circumstances in Mexico are weird, I think one of the positives we can take away goes to Josh's point, which is your starters and your bullpen limited damage in a place in which routine fly balls can go out the ballpark and spin rates aren't exactly plus in that elevation. And look, all due respect to France, who did a very serviceable job on this team last year and was exactly what they needed. I think Arrighetti fits more into what this team is really looking for, which is swing and miss stuff. Grand, it remains to be seen whether the league catches up to him the way it has Brown and France. But Charlie, give me your general thoughts on what you've seen early on Arrighetti.
You know, not electric stuff, but good stuff. Name of the game also with Arrighetti is command, right? The Astros' entire pitching staff so far this season has just walked way too many batters. Fundamentally, it's because unworthy pitchers have been throwing too many innings. Right? With Verlander settled in, he's not going to be regularly, right? The control was an issue and limited his innings the last time out. But Verlander's not going to be walking four guys per nine innings unless he falls off the table here. Right? Fromber's not a high walk guy. Javier, if he makes some progress in that area, right? He has electric stuff, not 98, 99, but just the invisible fastball and so forth. I think Arrigetti's ceiling is probably middle to back end of the rotation. Well, that has tremendous value, right? If you're going with replacement level guys or worse in the four and five spots of your rotation, replacing that with, okay, middle of the pack is a meaningful upgrade. So if Arrigetti can get there starting Thursday or going forward, that's fine.
Anybody else kind of get Lance McCullers vibes watching Arrigetti with the hair and their deliveries kind of somewhat similar?
And can implode very quickly. Yeah, no, there's definitely those vibes there. So Josh, you brought to our attention right before we started recording this episode, Bob Nightingale in his latest column had some interesting comments connected to former Astros manager Dusty Baker. I'm going to read you this quote because I think this chunk of text here is interesting. Quote, "It was the constant media criticism and interference from the Astros analytics department that ultimately led Dusty Baker to retire as manager after last season. Well, after enduring their worst start in 55 years, the Astros now are recognizing just how much they miss the future Hall of Famer. Baker was a master with a calming influence when times were rough, leading the Astros to the American League Championship Series in each of his four seasons with a World Series title and two AL pennants. The Astros sure could use his influence now." A lot to unpack from that, but right off the bat, I guess I want to know, Charlie, are you buying that Dusty got ran off by the baseball nerds?
Well, look, a lot of layers to go with here. Bob Nightingale's a really good baseball writer, but who exactly on the record or off has suggested the Astros, boy, we're really missing Dusty. We started 7-19 because we don't have Dusty's firm hand steering the ship. You know, Joe Espada's like a substitute teacher. We're all firing off spitballs and showing up late for class and there's no discipline. Where's any of that? The Astros have played garbage baseball, injuries to the rotation, multiple hitters who've just been awful. I mean, was Dusty Baker Alex Bregman's personal binky? I mean, come on. Alex Bregman has been sorry so far this season, right? Mr. Slow Starts, never like this. One game left in April, Alex Bregman, 555 OPS, 216 batting average, Mr. Pop Fly, weak rollover ground ball, lazy fly ball to right field. Is that because Dusty Baker's not here? Chaz McCormick, is he just have a like berry scurvy level of banana pudding deficiency? And that's why Chaz McCormick has an OPS of 603 and has been a terrible player? Look, Dusty, beloved figure within the game, very, very distinguished career, ultimately probably going to go into the Hall of Fame as a manager. But let's call crapola on one narrative that every time Dusty leaves a team, that team goes right down the toilet. Dusty Baker, when he left the San Francisco Giants, the next year, the Giants won more games. In 2002, as a wild card, they got in and went to the World Series, lost it to the Angels, a series they blew at a 6-1 lead, leading 3-2 in game six, blew it, then lost game seven. Am I putting that on Dusty? No, but that Dusty left and that's why the Giants collapsed? BS. They won 101 games under Felipe Alou the next season. So people thinking Dusty, oh, he's the panacea that cures all. Well, Felipe Alou was an idiot. I thought Felipe Alou was a pretty respected guy. Dusty Baker, Chicago Cubs. His last season with the Cubs, they went 66-96. The Cubs got worse after that? Stop this. Cincinnati Reds. Okay, they fell off. You know what? If you're going to a gunfight, don't bring a knife. I'm ready. Dusty Baker's last season with the Reds, they had three stud offensive players. At that point, great Joey Votto. The outfielder, Shin-Soo Choo, and now Astros spring training staffer, at least, Jay Bruce, shout out Beaumont. Well, the season after Dusty left, Shin-Soo Choo was gone. The Texas Rangers gave him an idiotic free agent contract. Joey Votto missed 100 games injured, and Jay Bruce collapsed. I mean, maybe Jay Bruce was an emotional wreck because Dusty left as the manager. I mean, scratch at least a little below the surface on this garbage. Then the Washington Nationals. Yeah, when Dusty left, the year after they took a step back, the year after that, they won the World Series. I believe Houston specifically recalls that in 2019. So that if Dusty leaves, organizations become instantly, we'll be gone. This would be the first if the Astros are going to go on to be 59 and 103. And if that's the case, it's not because Dusty left. It's because overall team performance went glug, glug, glug.
I thought the other funny part was saying that he left because of the media and because of pressure from the Astros analytics team. I'm paraphrasing, but I'm like, he wasn't listening to those guys. He wasn't listening to Dana Brown telling him to play Diaz. He was saying, no, we're rolling with Maldi. I don't care how terrible he is as a hitter. And we're going to keep Abreu batting cleanup or fifth for the whole season, even though he's ninth worst OPS in all of baseball. So doesn't seem like much pressure from the Astros analytics department, since Dana Brown has said that the lineup was Dusty's, that the managers make those calls, and all the analytics decisions that were being pushed on him, he looked the other way. So I don't see how that would have been a reason to leave. And because he gets questions about Chaz McCormick and Pudding, basically he's just getting treated like a manager in any other bigger media market. It's pretty tame in Houston. If you can't handle the heat in Houston, Texas, this is not for you. I think a lot of this stuff with Nightingale, like, are these just your opinions, or are these based on anything?
I buy that it wore on Dusty, right? The analytics guys, these mosquitoes always buzzing and giving me this data point and that data point. And Dusty was always one to point out, you know, I valued numbers going back before it was called analytics, not at the depth, certainly, that they've evolved to in this era of baseball. And while he had autonomy to make that lineup out and obviously fully used it, just that every day, you know, he felt like they were just flicking him in the head or his ear, just annoying him with, why, hey, give this some thought, or how about that? Leave me alone. But just to double down on where Josh is on the meat, the notoriously vicious Houston media, right? Other than if Dusty was just old and tired, and you know what, at 74 years old, if that was the case, understandable that he was harassed and beleaguered. Dusty Baker was run off because of media criticism. Please, if true, that's just weak. And if Dusty no longer had the stomach for it, he was smart to retire.
Let's look at what the calming hand of Dusty really did. I mean, it's not like he walked into a team and turned it around. He came after a sign-stealing scandal cost Houston both their manager and GM, but they had just been eliminated. They came out of a really tough World Series, a Game 7 of a World Series. How did they finish with the calming force of Dusty coming in? Well, they finished under 500 in that COVID-shortened season and went down 0-3 in the ALCS to the Rays, which, to their credit, came back and forced a Game 7. But
to Dusty's credit, they rallied.
To Dusty's full credit.
All about his resolve and leadership.
To Dusty's full credit, and literally not the players one bit. But it's just interesting that
players fault when they fall behind, Dusty's magic touch when things go well.
Yeah, and we've read also that Dusty vetoed at least one trade by James Click, and by all circumstantial evidence, it appears as if James Click lost a power battle to Dusty Baker and maybe that think tank of retired players that now seems to be dominating the front office decisions, at least if you believe what Reggie Jackson says. But one of the things I want to get your opinions on this. One of the things that we attributed to Dusty was the incessant use of Jake Myers in spite of performance. In spite of results, they kept running Myers out there. We thought that was a Dusty bundled into an anti-Chaz McCormick thing. Chandler Rome talked to people on the inside. They said Dusty had something against Chaz. So you go, okay, well, Dusty bounces. It's a clean slate. You can do whatever you want to. Well, one of the first things Joe Espada announces is that they're going to play Jake Myers out in center field. We thought we were going to see Chaz McCormick play there full time. Nope. So looking back at that now, do we think that that was a Dusty thing? Or do we think some of those decisions were being pressured by a greater analytics department? And maybe that was a concession that Dusty Baker was making.
Well, certainly on the analytics side, they have been steadfast that Jake Myers is absolutely their best overall defensive center fielder, and still give him a chance to hit. And if he's at the bottom of the lineup, he'll net out as a positive. Well, he's just never been able to sustain enough offense to net out as a positive, and it's why McCormick wanted to play more center field and Dubon emerged as an alternative. I will say in Dusty's behalf, the two things. One, he was a terrific handler of people, just a very interesting man who guys like talking with and playing for. And I also think it is natural when you are the manager, the areas of which you have control. And if someone is telling you, do this, do this, do this, and not only do you not have to do this, you disagree with this, you're going to lean to that. Right. Even if it's not necessarily the clear, better option, it's no one likes to be told what to do. And if you have genuine strength in your convictions, right, even if those convictions are wrong, I think most people in that type of spot are going to say, I'm going to Sinatra here my way. Right. This is my call. Espada, when he pulled Verlander, 95 pitches at Wrigley Field. Justin Verlander acutely aware of his place in history. I'm chasing 300 wins. What do you mean you're taking me out? I'll get out of this. Let me qualify for the win. But Espada, hey, we're playing the long game here. And even with the Astros a mess, you know, and each game feels more important than it otherwise would the end of April when you're 7-18 or whatever they were at that time. But taking Verlander out is the right decision. This rookie manager goes out and pulls the 41-year-old surefire Hall of Famer because he felt that was the right thing to do, right? Agree or disagree, credit Espada for doing what he felt was the right thing to do. And I think Dusty was in similar vein, but I do think a little bit of it also became personal for Dusty. Don't tell me to stay off your lawn. I'm the old guy here. You get the hell off my lawn.
I think the Meyer stuff maybe coming from the Astros analytics department's interesting, Brandon. I also, it was one of our concerns that we had a little bit, right, with the Espada hiring. I think we were all happy with it, but we also knew, like, this is going to be kind of Dana Brown's guy. Like, what Dana wants to get done, Espada's probably going to do that for him, right? That was one of the concerns, that maybe he'd be kind of a yes man, happy to get the opportunity, whatever you need me to do, Dana, you know, I'll be your eyes and ears, you know, on the field. To see that they push Myers early in the year, but what did Espada do very early in the season when they started Myers and then Myers was coming up to the plate late in games? Espada was pinch hitting for him and taking him out in some critical situations. So it makes you wonder if, yeah, there is a little bit from the front office going, yeah, Jake Myers. But when it's on the field and it's an important time, win or lose the ball game, the manager's going, nah, get him out of there. And what, Singleton sometimes was the option that was coming in for him to pinch hit. You know, I guess they just love that righty lefty matchup. That's something that's, man, that Astros stick to that. Espada seems to love it. So yeah, I think it's interesting. Maybe there is a little bit of push for Jake Myers from the front office when Dusty was there and with the Espada. And then when it comes to having to win a ball game, he's finding himself on the bench.
And just in terms of branching out, right, Loperfido gets the call up this week because beyond all reasonable doubt at this point, Abreu's washed up. Right? He's washed up until or unless he proves otherwise. Chaz McCormick was a really good player last year. Really, really good. Jake Myers was not. Jake Myers this season is not. Where is the timeline on those guys? Right. And Sugarland, AAA stats be a little sketchy in terms of valuing them, but Pedro León's been strong. There's a guy Astros spent millions on, signing him out of Cuba, slow trip up through the minors, but 25 years old now. I mean, if you're looking to shuffle the deck a little bit, get a little energy infusion, maybe run into someone who gets off to a hot start offensively, can Pedro León creep onto the radar as an outfield option? Because Dubon, as the Swiss Army knife, is stellar. But he starts the week as a sub-700 OPS guy, right? Last year in his career year, he was a 720 OPS guy. The upside is limited on Mauricio Dubon's offense. So I'm not clamoring for Pedro León to get to the major leagues, but at some point, what's going to hurt?
Josh, going back to your point, it's tough for me to even say that Joe Espada is Dana Brown's guy because I don't know how much power and autonomy Dana Brown really has as a decision maker within this organization. And not that we know anything, obviously not, but we're just judging off of context of optics and statements that we're getting from the front office. But if I'm playing devil's advocate, Dusty even pinch hit for Jeremy Pena in the postseason in the previous year. And I don't think that was an indictment on him as a player. It just was this kid could not hit the broadside of a barn. So in a situation which they needed wins, they did pinch hit for him. So
They dropped Tucker way in the lineup too when he was scuffling.
Yeah, exactly. So, and again, I don't think that's an indictment of the players necessarily or their trust in the players. It's a admission that they're scuffling and they need a win, especially in the postseason. I do want to soften my preceding snark by just saying I admit 100% Dusty Baker is deservedly a Hall of Famer. He deserves a ton of credit for what he did in 2022, pushing all the right buttons. I'm on record and maintain the opinion that they do not win a World Series in 2022 without Dusty Baker being a part of that chemistry. We've seen it now with two championships. Everything has to fall in your favor. You have to get a lot of lucky bounces. And a lot of times it is those decisions that get made. There's that one in 2019 that didn't get made that we all look at. Dusty Baker got the Astros maybe their most important championship, which was the one that revalidated 17. So I'm not a Dusty hater by any means. I just think this comment from Bob Nightingale appears to be a defense of maybe the guy who was kind of his inside source while he was managing in Houston. Gents, I'll give you the final word before we go.
I understand it, right? People like clarity, hero versus villain, good versus bad. But baseball manager performances aren't binary, right? You push buttons. If they work, you're a mastermind. If you push buttons, they don't work, you're a dunce. It's just way too simplistic. And in the end, with specific, rare exceptions, it's about the player performance. Right? In 2019, we don't know with absolute certainty if A.J. Hinch leaves Greinke in a little bit longer or goes to Gerrit Cole out of the pen. That it's over. The Astros absolutely win that World Series. Seems highly probable, certainly infinitely more likely than how it played out, going to a seemingly close to, if not spent, Will Harris. But even with that, Will Harris gives up a ball to Howie Kendrick that slices and hits the foul pole in the corner, barely a home run. Sometimes things just don't work out. Bad decisions, well, we fell into that one in a good way. Good, well-thought-out decisions, if the players don't deliver, is that in the end on the manager? Yes, in terms of we judge results and the one-loss record is their resume. That's it.
For me, I think all this stuff from Nightingale, a lot of this is about timing right now, because I think it's part of what you said, Brandon. I think he probably was one of his sources, but I also think he writes for the media, right? Astros are scuffling. Dusty Baker's going and receiving his Lifetime Achievement Award the same week. And so, I mean, it's kind of convenient timing to be like, here's Dusty getting his Lifetime Achievement Award. The Astros are, you know, historically terrible this year without him. Maybe this is a good time to talk about the Astros and Dusty a little bit and get some page views.
We'll close it there. That's another episode of Stone Cold Stros in the books. If you enjoyed the show, please hit like on the video. If you're watching on YouTube and if you're listening on podcast, consider giving us a 5-star rating and review us. Charlie, Josh, and I will be back here next week, but you don't have to wait that long to get your Houston sports fix. All you have to do is subscribe to this channel, Sports Map Houston, and our sister channel, Sports Map Texans, to get all the latest Astros and Texans coverage. Maybe one day, some Rockets coverage. One day. But until then, go Astros. Oh, I said that wrong. Shit. Go Stros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.